You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene
Johnson.
Of the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz at the Movies.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Bing is for doing. We're here doing an after show for Riddick, the new Vin Diesel movie.
Yes.
Starring Riddick.
Starring Riddick and Vin Diesel.
And I am your host, Phil Svitek, joined alongside...
Hello, everyone. I'm Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everybody. It's Dimitri Panos.
And for those of you fanboys out there, we're going to take a slightly different approach. Of course, we'll talk about the story. We'll talk about the history. But we'll come at it more of a filmmaker perspective, more of a business perspective, rather than a, let's say, fanboy perspective. Although Dimitri's kind of a fanboy. Yeah. I cannot claim to be a fanboy, although I enjoyed this movie heavily, as did Marissa. But so just know that up front before you guys are like, these guys aren't true fanboys. So just know that ahead of time. And, of course, if you're joining us for the first time, know that we're talking about a movie we all saw. We assume you as the audience have seen it as well. And so we're not going to be reviewing the movie. We're going to be discussing it in length. So obviously a lot of spoilers come with that.
Spoiler alert. And if you haven't seen it, consider this as Cliff Notes. Now you'll be educated at the water cooler tomorrow. And if you haven't seen the movie, you can say, hey, I saw Riddick and know everything about it.
There you go.
Yeah, and because it's the third installment of this franchise. Now, I don't think you really needed to see the first and second one to understand what went down in the third movie.
I agree. Yeah, I agree, but it does take its cues from Pitch Black.
Mm-hmm. It's good if you know the mythology, but it's not necessary.
No.
Exactly.
You know, and before we kind of get into it, I mean, it's interesting when it opens up. At first, I thought, okay, you might have to know the mythology, but then they give kind of a quick, backstory, and it's like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, it was fun to see Carl Urban, who was in Chronicles of Riddick, the second movie. It was fun to, it was fun to see him in there for like 2 seconds. I saw his name in the credits, and I said, oh, all right, so they are going to reference at least the last movie, but that came out a little while ago too.
Yeah, so let's talk about how this kind of got started. Because Maria Menounos, our founder, knows Vin well, I have a few inside stories. And so, for example, Vin, the reason why he was cast as Riddick was because he was in Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, at the time, he lied to that was before the movie had come out, Saving Private Ryan. And he was like, I'm basically the star of Saving Private Ryan. And then when they eventually saw it, they're like, dude, you die.
Yeah.
But at that point, it was too late. But obviously, the result, they were happy with that Vin was the Riddick character.
But I will, in all fairness to Vin, I mean, most everybody does die in Saving Private Ryan. If you haven't seen it, we're not talking, spoiler. But I mean, it's funny because he did cut his teeth on Saving Private Ryan. A lot of people forget that he's in the movie, but I think his character is Carparzio. Is from Brooklyn, and he has a key moment in which he saves a little girl. And, his character had enough presence in Private Ryan, and he may have made it halfway through the movie. It's a long movie. But, it's understandable. I mean, I think a lot of people were thinking big things of Mr. Diesel after Private Ryan and Pitch Black to an extent, too, because that basically it's a B science fiction horror movie, and which did a little bit better than people thought. The reviews on it were pretty decent. That's how he pretty much started his career.
Yeah, and, it's interesting how, even back in 2000 with that movie, it's such a niche audience, but all these kind of, the comic book movies now, they're going back to the idea, okay, start with the core audience, hit your niche market, then expand from there. I mean, at around that time, Napoleon Dynamite would have been an example of that.
Sure.
You remember the marketing around Napoleon? It was just for nerds.
Yep.
And then as the nerds saw it, it expanded to a wider and wider audience.
Uh-huh.
But I think, that's been the success of Riddick, I would say, is that core fan base.
Oh, absolutely. I think personally, sorry, there's a score sign. I'll lower that. I think personally, I think that the Riddick franchise is a very fascinating one. Because when you go back to Pitch Black, the Riddick character is for sure, like, he's a presence, but you're talking about he doesn't have his first bit of dialogue, if you want to discount the overvoice at the very beginning of the movie.
That too.
He doesn't have his first bit of dialogue till about a half hour into the movie, which is fascinating because if you're going to call him your lead character, and I think you can argue in Pitch Black is whether the lead actor or the character is Riddick or Radha Mitchell's pilot character, who everybody assumes is the captain. She has a complete story arc. Riddick sort of has a story arc, but it isn't, it was called Pitch Black. It wasn't called Riddick at the time. And it was, like I said, it was meant to be a, like a sci-fi horror movie, and it worked. And, it's fascinating that the Riddick character has grown, that they would, that Universal would find, hey, we're going to make Chronicles of Riddick. And they dumped a boatload of money in that, you know, and it didn't fare as well. And the mere fact that they were making a third is sort of kind of surprising. And I think it's partly fan-based, but I think it's partly Vin Diesel. He loves the character.
You have to hand it to the fan base, too, because the sci-fi generation is usually geared towards the male demographic. And I got to admit that I first watched Pitch Black and Chronicles of Riddick because of my brother. And he's a male who was into the sci-fi, but I ended up enjoying this movie too. So it just goes to show that it's not just for one certain demographic. Anyone can like it.
Yeah, I think so. But again, when you look at what Chronicles of Riddick, okay, the first Pitch Black cost $23 million to make. Mm-hmm. And then you went into Chronicles, okay, and it made, let's say 40. It's $39.2 million. Then Chronicles of Riddick, the budget was $105 million. So, and its total domestic gross, it didn't even hit 60. It was 57.7. Now, most studios at that point were done. They're not going to come back for a third. And this one, surprisingly, you know, I think because Vin Diesel has a passion for it.
Go ahead. So with the second movie, though, let's also talk about, you know, that it was a PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which Pitch Black was not.
No.
Obviously, this one is not.
No.
And I, you know, I think too many studios go with that route of like, okay, let's make it as wide as possible. So
sure.
Let's slap the PG-13 on it.
Yeah, which I always question. I always question, especially if you're setting up a franchise. Live Free, Die Hard, you know, disproves, like, you know, it went against my grain. Like, you know, you're making a PG-13 Die Hard movie. Of course, it did well for Fox, but I will take the unrated version that's on DVD any time of the day. And I, you know, I'm not 100% sure that the PG-13 was the only thing that killed Chronicles of Riddick. I mean, it was, if you've seen it, I will admit, it's even being a fan, it is a bit overblown and convoluted at times. Has a great cast. I mean, Carl Urban, Dandy Newton, Judi Dench is in Chronicles.
I was just going to say, I think the second movie, Chronicles, had way more cast in it.
Oh,
therefore, probably made the budget a bit bigger. But there were more story arcs and character arcs and storylines to follow in the second movie than there was in the first or
absolutely.
Third.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think that it's such a fascinating, again, when you talk about fan base and it has a great fan base, most movies wouldn't survive, most franchises wouldn't survive that kind of a disaster at the box office. And I think because of, say, fan base and because of Vin Diesel, I mean, he put up or shut up on this movie. He put up some of his own cash.
Let's talk about how this was, you know, really made. And, you know, part of the... you know, Maria's known him for so long, and she actually knew about the deal back in, I believe, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want the full kind of story from his perspective, definitely check out Maria's talk show, Conversations with Maria Menounos, where she interviews Vin Diesel for about an hour, and then, you know, he had to go because of time. But the story goes, Universal wanted him in Tokyo Drift,
right.
Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. And so he said, you know, don't give me pay, but give me the rights to Riddick. And at the time, they gave him basically a year and a half to make it,
mm-hmm.
which in movie terms is...
That's tough.
Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
And at the same time, they were trying to contract him for all these different movies, so
yep.
How was he going to... You know, there's no way you can make everything if you're already starring in
absolutely.
All these other Fast and Furious movies. But because of that, he won out the rights, and slowly but surely, you know, he kind of kept the rights and things like that, and obviously eventually got made... Because around 2006, he wasn't as you know, I mean, now he's a megastar, but yeah. around 2006, was he...
mostly for Fast and Furious.
He's still, in Knockaround Guys, I believe, he did the Sydney Pollack movie, which he got good reviews, a little independent film. Right now, Brainvard, I forget the name of that movie, but it was a small little independent movie. He was making his bones, he was always trying to, in a sense, I'm not disparaging, but come back. But to his credit, he's had longevity. He's had staying power. He never literally got out of the business to come back in. He was always there. He was always a presence. And he is a presence on screen. People seem to like him. He even went that family route that Schwarzenegger, did so well with movies like Kindergarten Cop and that movie that he was in.
Yeah, he was in really The Pacifier.
Right, The Pacifier. And that movie did well for him. Yeah. And. You know, so he's always been around, and I think it's a great story for what, again, he is a fan of that character, and I think it shows in this movie too, and he put up or shut up, and that to me that's very commendable.
And
he enjoys,
I mean, you know, for those of you who are Vin Diesel fans, you know, he enjoys this character, and he's very much like a nerd. I didn't realize how much of a nerd he really was.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he's so nerdy, and he loves his visuals and things like that. The reason why he signed on to Fast and the Furious was because of the way he never even read the script. They described the scene in the movie to him.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of great, especially with this franchise, how involved he is.
Yeah,
great. And he really, you know, talking about his fan base, I mean, he's almost got 48 million fans on Facebook. And so he really listened to them and, you know, kind of catered to story based around their input.
Right.
So he knew he was going to make a movie, I mean, that they were going to like.
Yeah, and I think he succeeded. And, we forgot about another action movie. It was Triple X.
Yeah.
Rob Cohen, who I believe did the first Fast and Furious
movie.
Yes,
he did.
So, he's been around. And he had, like we said, he's had longevity. And then, of course, with this reboot of what they've done with the Fast and Furious franchise, it's just been insane and incredible. And I think because of that, that helped Riddick get off the ground as well.
Yeah, and it was good on Vin's part to keep continuing the Fast and Furious because once he literally spit out all these movies, it kept his momentum going for him to keep Riddick afloat.
Absolutely. And I think in some notes that I had written prior to us sitting here to talk about the movie, I mean, it's a fan-based movie, which sometimes when you talk money-wise, doesn't equate to box office. And I think a great example is you can compare this to Serenity. Joss Whedon, for you Joss Whedon fans, he did this show called Firefly, which, who you listen to, Fox could have, like, torpedoed it, and it never really had the longevity on television screens as we would have liked. But Joss felt really strongly and passionate about this. Universal actually picked this up to turn it into a movie, and he made Serenity, which did okay at the box office. You got your fan base in there, and it never really crossed over. And I wonder today, had Joss Whedon, this was pre-Avengers, and I wonder today if after the Avengers, we might see another Firefly movie out there, or even a bigger Serenity movie. Joss Whedon is quoted at Comic-Con as saying, had I known that Avengers was going to be so big, I may not have killed off any of my characters from Firefly. And I think Riddick, Vin Diesel is in that driver's seat right now. We're at Universal. You know, he could go off and make this passion project relatively simple for his part.
And, I'm not too familiar with Firefly. And the reason why I want to bring, what kind of actors were involved in that?
Well, now you had Nathan Fillion, who's in Castle right now. Mm-hmm. He's really big. I always forget her name. Lawrence Fishburne's wife, who's on a very popular television series right now that you guys may buzz about. Alan Tudyk, who is in Dodgeball, the pirate guy. Right. You know,
but there's no one, you know, with this one, you know, you have what? Because let's talk, so you went to see the movie, and who sat next to you?
I had five girls sitting behind me.
Lucky.
Well, you know what? Well, here's the thing that when I saw them walk in, I was like, maybe they walked into the wrong theater, you know, and they sat right behind me. And it was fascinating because, okay, this wasn't a Twilight movie or like a Hunger Games kind of thing. It was a rated R Riddick. And throughout the movie, you could tell that they were A, Vin Diesel fans. Oh, my God. When he first shows up, they were like, oh, they were like swooning. you would have thought he was like Taylor Swift or something. And then as the movie was going, they were like involved and into the movie. And at the end of the movie, as they were walking in front of me, they were like, one of them said, oh, that was like the best ever. And I was like, wow, that's really cool that it went to that fan base. I wish actually I saw more of that. The other weird thing that happened in my theater is that most everybody showed up literally 2 minutes before the movie started. I walked into an empty theater about 10 minutes prior to showtime. But by the time the movie started, I would say it was at least half to a little bit more filled. So, you know, and they were basically, it was male driven. But
yeah, that was like my experience when I went to go see it. It was half filled theater, but everyone there wanted to see it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there's the side. So with Vin, and Riddick, there's the sci-fi audience, but then there's also, you know, like these girls.
Fangirl audience.
The Vin Diesel audience.
Yeah.
You know, and so combine the two, now you've got a huge kind of potential.
You do have a good potential. And don't forget, there was a Latin American audience, which we can't forget about the Latin American audience because they're factoring big. And I think it was 30% when they were doing the audience breakdown, 37% of it was Latin American audience coming in. He has a big following. The Fast and Furious in Latin America is huge for Vin Diesel and for Universal. My only thing is, I was just always curious as to, as I'm watching the movie going, why are they opening, why is Universal, they have their cash cow in Vin Diesel. Riddick isn't, by all means, a bad movie at all. I think we all enjoyed it. It's a good, for what it is, it's a good movie. I just couldn't figure out why Universal picked this weekend of all weekends to open a male-driven movie. You've got college football Saturday, and NFL starts today. Your male audience is going to be drinking beer and staying home or going to a bar watching TV. They're not necessarily, it's not a male-driven movie-going weekend. Usually you'll find a lot of female-type romantic comedies are released around this weekend, and there's not one.
Yeah, because they're getting away from their boyfriends.
Yeah,
do you think it would have done better if it opened up on Labor Day weekend?
It could have done better. I mean, Labor Day weekend's a tough weekend, too. I mean, some movies... there was a horror movie that opened up on Labor Day
Year
weekend.
Next.
No, not some years ago with Justin Long. And that movie did really well on Labor Day weekend. Labor Day weekend's a tough weekend to open a movie. You just don't know what's going to work and not going to work. Mm-hmm. But I think if you had maybe waited, if you looked at October, there's not a hell of a lot going on the rest of this month and October that you could have opened it. And I do think had there been another release date, it would have done better than the 18.7 I think it brought in. Now, if you're reading any of the press and trades leading into this Friday, a lot of the prognosticators had this movie into low to mid-20s. Somebody even had it at like mid-30s or low-30s. So obviously, I think football played a big factor into the male movie-going audience this weekend. Because, you know, the reviews are right where you would think it would think they were going to be on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it was a 57%, which for this kind of movie is right on par. It's not a big surprise. The big surprise, as we talked about, is that it got better reviews than Salinger, a much hyped documentary. And you figure something like that is going to get great reviews because, you know, the Salinger name and everything. And Riddick got better reviews than Salinger. And it's right around...
But again, Riddick already has a 13-year following.
That's true.
That might have helped with... the rating.
Yeah, it could, but also don't forget, I mean, again, I think the star power of Vin Diesel usually don't wait that long in between movies to make your sequel. If you also noticed on this, what did they get rid of in the moniker? They got rid of Chronicles of, which was a really big. That's where they wanted to go with the franchise. The Chronicles of Riddick, and make each movie a separate thing. So far as like they even changed sort of kind of. If you get the Blu-ray of Pitch Black, it's called The Chronicles of Riddick on the cover of the box. Pitch Black.
Because I was just going to say, I was like, the first movie doesn't have
no.
Riddick name or Chronicles.
No, it was called Pitch Black, and yeah, it's so that's why I find this so fascinating, and then. A very successful video game that got greatly reviewed, and the gamers really loved it. And I believe that was, I know it was called Escape from Butcher's Bay, but I think that had Chronicles of Riddick.
Which Vin is a huge, you know, he loves video games, and he's a huge advocate, you know, pushing that stuff forward.
And that game got really good reviews, and the gamers loved it. There was an animated Riddick movie that came out that they sort of kind of called the 2.5 or the third movie that came out and again had the Chronicles of Riddick moniker on it. So here we are with the third live action movie and it's just called Riddick. They get rid of Chronicles altogether, which I find.
I think that's kind of smart on their part though because it doesn't limit themselves. It doesn't put a cap on this franchise.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So it gives them leeway to make more movies in
sure.
the future.
So let's kind of start. Let's get into the movie a little bit. There's a great line as Vin Diesel's kind of narrating. He says, "You know, let's reset the clock."
Yep.
Yeah.
Back to zero, and basically it's a nice nod to basically let's reset this franchise to what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. And also, you know. It was the director's idea, David Tui, to basically, open up on Vin Diesel for pretty much the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's great because that's what people want to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're coming back to the franchise because of Vin, and so let's give him Vin right off the bat. And Vin really loved it because he's like, I don't get to interact with anybody. This is going to be a great challenge.
Yep.
You know, and so he really took to that.
Yeah, he did. Were you going to say something?
I liked how it opens up on him for the first half an hour because it shows this movie is about him and he's the anti-hero that we all root for in this whole franchise. But it goes to show that in the segment where it's just him, it shows his power, like his strengths and his weaknesses throughout the whole thing that, eventually all those qualities will help throughout the movie and his interaction with the other cast members.
And I think that's a strength of the character. He's not a superhero. He doesn't fly or anything like that. He's not impervious to bullets. He's not impervious to bones getting stuck in him or anything like that. And I think what's great about the character is that it's his fortitude that gives him his strength. It's his, because that guy, he takes his licks. Big time. And
his perseverance
and just wanting to get along. He does sort of kind of remind me, in this movie in particular, in Riddick, he did sort of kind of remind me of Mad Max to an extent. Mad Max, another anti-hero who travels the earth. And again, another character that takes his licks. He's not a superhuman guy and he'll get shot and beat up big time. Riddick is the same way, except, he can pull a Martin Riggs, dislocate my shoulder kind of thing to get out of things.
Which
like
he
Pitch
did
Black.
In the first movie,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Pitch Black he does. And, but I think that makes the Riddick character, because it is about fortitude, it is about perseverance, and it's about survival, and that's what's important to him. And he does, I think the other thing that makes Riddick work, especially in Pitch Black, to set everything up, is that he does have a little bit of heart. He pretends he can play savage and everybody knows he's a killer.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere inside him, there is a little bit of heart, whether it's for an animal or for another human being.
And, that's exactly, because he doesn't interact with any humans for the first part, except from the flashback, the fact that he gets his dog.
Right.
I think that was a great illustration of compassion.
I agree.
You know?
Absolutely.
Man's best friend.
Yep. And it was his best friend. And
he showed that humorous side of him that we normally don't get in the first or second movie.
Yeah, I'll talk about Pitch Black. I'll bring up Pitch Black only because it sort of bookends Pitch Black. And it definitely the thread line relates back to Pitch Black a lot. And, you know, there was a little bit of humor, but there were things that were echoed. There were certain themes, religious theme, perseverance theme. You know, there's a lot more to fear out there than me kind of a theme.
And the killing. In the first movie, I believe the second movie, he says, "I'm going to kill you with this cup." And
yeah.
And the third movie, he's like, "I'm going to kill you with your sword."
I'm going to kill you with this sword. That scene was great.
Yeah.
That was like actually one of my favorite scenes. And he goes, "Yeah, 5 seconds, you get me out of these chairs. I'm going to kill you with your sword and your head will be in the box." And then when things go down, I think it was Katie Sackhoff's character that says, "I think that was under 5 seconds." So, yeah, it's good stuff. You know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So,
might as well kind of. I liked how in the first 30 minutes too, you know, despite the voiceover, it wasn't too heavy-handed. You know, because they definitely had faith in the audience that they would kind of get it right. The biggest part of it was, you know, when he's taking the poison and things like that, mm-hmm. and trying to get used to it. You know, I could have seen any other movie just going like, "Hey, and you know, I'm going to put the poison in me so I can to try to explain it rather than like people figure out
too much exposition."
Oh yeah, too much. Yeah. But in the first and second movie, there's always a voiceover at the beginning and ending of each movie too. So I think that just goes to show that they copied the element in the third movie because we've seen the first two, we'll get it, we'll understand the third one as well.
Yeah, and you want to hit those same beats, and especially since you're setting the clock back, you know, it's almost, you know, we got that movie in the middle there, and we make the reference to it because this is going to explain how he ends up where he is. But I do appreciate that it pays its respect to its origins. And like we said, the first movie was not – Riddick isn't in the title. It is Pitch Black, and it's called Pitch Black for a reason.
Yeah.
right? And, you know, in that movie, again, he doesn't speak until like a half hour into it. And you're meeting all of your other characters. So he wasn't even the main guy going on, and there wasn't much exposition. I think they're smarter, and I agree. They just let that part play out.
And apart from the first 30 minutes, Riddick really isn't seen on screen that much.
No.
But again, his presence is there.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And I also noticed once the mercenaries and the bounty hunters come to the planet, we see most of them for a long time.
Sure.
And then Riddick goes off goes out of the scenes, and we don't see him for maybe another half an hour.
Yeah, and we don't see him, but his presence is still there.
He
is talked about, like, you have no idea who you're dealing with. Like, what are you doing here? And that's one thing I love about this is that Riddick's presence shadows everything. Even if he's not on screen, the characters know, well, some of them do, what they're dealing with. And there was a great piece of dialogue between the Merc, who ends up being John's, and our bounty hunter. Where they're like, "Okay, you're going to play it this way? I'll tell you what. You call us. I'm not going to help you until you call us." Mm-hmm. And, like, for lack of a better, shit was going down, and Katie Sackhoff's like, "Well, should we go?" He's like, "Nope. Let them deal with who he is out there." And that's a great thing about the Riddick character. There aren't that many who are so imposing, so to speak.
Yeah, and that just goes to show how strong Riddick is and his overall presence, that he does put the fear of God in everyone.
He does.
He's that fearful guy that everyone dreads, but they need to catch him.
Yep.
But they still don't want to deal with him because he is so strong and powerful.
Yeah. And that's why I actually sort of kind of wish that this movie was sort of a backstory of Riddick. I would like to learn a little bit more. And I thought we were going to get that when he said everything goes back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought we were going to end up back home and maybe learn some more of his backstory of, like, how did he become to who he, you know, you just sort of kind of wonder what his story is theatrically. Mm-hmm. Not from a video game perspective or a comic book or whatever, but theatrically. I think it would have been a nice thing to explore. And if they decide to go, maybe the next movie he will get back to Fury and we'll learn.
I thought they were going to go that route.
Same here.
Especially because of the way the first 30 minutes were structured. I thought that's what the climax was going to be, but obviously not.
Yeah, and I wasn't bothered by that.
I wasn't either.
Yeah, yeah. I think there was more backstory in Chronicles of Riddick's character because they show that he is one of the last Furians to still exist. So they went more in background of him in the second one than they did in third.
Yeah.
So,
Let's talk about the cast, you know, and you guys can speak to each actor, but I really like Vin's kind of casting process. He doesn't do auditions. No. He does basically like sit down interviews and sees their people's passion for the movie, and that's how he casts, because you know, he feels that anyone can nail an audition, but they're not going to really bring the performance.
Right.
And I thought this cast was great.
I think they work together really well. Yeah. And to me, as a fanboy, to me, there was only one other really recognizable, well, one and a half. And we'll go Katie Sackhoff.
Battlestar.
You know, Battlestar and other genre things. To me, she was the most familiar. And the gentleman who played the bounty hunter, because he was the villain in Bad Boys 2.
Jordy Ma.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who played Santana.
Yeah, Santana, and he was recognizable to me, but really nobody else was. And then when I started to look him up, then I figured out why. The guy that played Johns. I mean, do you realize that guy was a rugby player before he became an actor? Like, he's virtually, he's not an actor. He was a rugby player.
I kind of like the fact that went with people that we're not really familiar with, right? Like, I wouldn't say no names, but people that we don't really see that often,
right?
Because each character had their own standalone moment in the movie, and I think all of them together really equaled Vin Diesel.
Well, they had to, Bokeem Woodbine is, I guess, the other person who is recognizable to me.
I recognize him because he was in Total Recall, 2012.
Yeah, so, but you know, to me, it's I think casting Katie Sackhoff for them was a coup, you know, for a fanboy. You need somebody who's recognizable. And if you want to have a strong female character or presence, she does it.
Definitely.
She's great.
I liked her. I honestly haven't watched Battlestar, but I looked her up and I was like, she seems like a really big name in the franchise.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, she pulled off a coup when they were doing the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. You know, the original series is well known to fanboys and everything, but one character that all the classic lovers will go back to is Starbuck, played by Dirk Benedict, okay? And, you know, he's a beloved character and an actor. He went on to A-Team and everything. So when Ronald Moore went to go do this reboot, and he was picking his cast, when it came out that they hired a female to play Starbuck, it was like Ben Affleck being cast as Batman or you know, it was, people were in, they were like, I'm not going to watch. This is horrible. And God bless her, because she came onto the show. And if she didn't turn people around, where Starbuck became a very beloved character and Katie Sackhoff did a great job. You know, I think she's fantastic. I can't say enough about her. And from a fanboy's perspective, she geeks out. She goes to conventions. She understands the importance of fandom. You know, she does this stuff. She was in a Halloween movie, by the ways. She was in Halloween Resurrection, you know, as one of the victims. But, you know, she likes this stuff. And for a fanboy, you respect the person more when they don't turn their backs on it and treat it like a job. They understand the importance of the stuff. So, yeah, my hat's off. I think Katie Sackhoff is fantastic.
She had a great character to play.
Perfect.
I agree.
She was awesome.
An angry lesbian. What's better than that?
No, yeah. I liked her because she was woman power, and she broke the stereotypical views of a woman. And because she was kind of leader, and she was beating up people and not apologizing for it, and she could just get away with it, and no one dealt with her. They're like, oh no, she's not a chick to be messed with.
Absolutely.
And ultimately she ends up saving Riddick in the end. She's not the damsel in distress. She's the one saving people.
Which, again, I like that point. You know, I like that, again, because it's a reversal of what happens at the end of Pitch Black.
Yeah.
At the end of Pitch Black, it's Riddick who comes back to save a couple of folk. And in this movie, where you think, because this movie, Riddick opens up with him, with that over voice saying, I've been dumped pretty much all my life. And it's nice that he actually got saved. And people came back, and that scene with him and her picking him up was a great scene. It was really good.
I like that. And she ended up straddling him, though.
She did. She did.
I was like, oh, you knew that was going to happen eventually.
Yep.
But I liked her character because she was so badass and tough. Mm-hmm. And then I think she dropped the F-bomb more times than everyone else combined. So that just goes to show she was just this nice, strong woman leader.
Yep. And I agree. And personally, I wish that they would hire her in movies more because of that. I mean, she's easy on the eyes. She's good looking. She's got a great smile. But yet she can play hard as nails. She can play tough. You know, in a sense, I was thinking she, in a way, could be in an Aliens movie. She can be a Sigourney Weaver type.
Could be the next Ripley.
Right. She could be that type. And she could carry it off because she can play sympathetic. She can play the whole gambit. She can be comedic. She could be sympathetic. And she could be hard as nails. That's tough. You know, when they say there aren't enough roles for women, I think Katie Sackhoff.
What's
really,
the score?
What do we got? I don't know. What do we have? ESPN's loading up for, we can do football scores later, but, no, I just think that Katie Sackhoff is, she's definitely like a fanboy dream, because you want a strong female who's, yet good looking, can be funny, and can play the part and make it believable. You can believe that she's tough as nails.
She was definitely believable.
Awesome. Which is
great. Diaz was funny to me. He was the guy who was chewing gum, it seemed like.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. some of his, because his presence and the way he dealt with questions of like, I forgot which one, but like, you know, they asked him like, did you check? Not sure.
The scene where, I'm pretty sure the dog's dead.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Well, not really.
No.
That could be the dog.
There's just something about him that was just comedic. Just this big guy and the uncertainty with which he kind of carries himself.
Yeah, and
as
he
a lackey.
A
it was funny.
As a lackey, you wouldn't consider that guy a lackey to anybody, to be honest. I mean, he was imposing himself, so... Yeah, it was interesting to see that guy take that role. And he's from the wrestling universe, apparently, too.
Yeah, Dave Bautista.
Yeah, and he pulls that very well. He was good. He was probably my favorite lackey.
I liked his character. Because he did have a nice battle scene with Diaz.
Yeah.
With Diesel. Riddick.
Yeah, Riddick.
In the movie.
Yeah.
He had his moment, too.
Yeah, and he holds his own. And he had the comedic moments. And... yeah, I think cast-wise, everybody did gel together, and you got a sense. You know, and I will go back. I thought it was quite clever to bring in the gentleman. I thought it was clever to bring in Johns and how they did it. Now, for those uninitiated, Pitch Black, the Merc or Bounty Hunter, who is, the movie opens up. The Merc, his character's name was Johns, played by Cole Hauser, and he was bringing Riddick back to Slam, so to speak. And then things go
south.
Things go south on that planet. We realize that this bounty hunter Merc character is a morphine addict, and he has other types of plans going on. And I wouldn't even necessarily say that Riddick 100% dispatched him in a fight, but the creatures they were fighting end up whisking him off. So now we come 13 years later into Riddick, and it's not a vengeful brother. You know, when the reveal is that his name is Johns, we find out that, because he's like saying...
Yeah, which actually got me confused. So I was like, Johns from the first movie? Mm-hmm. That couldn't be possible. Seem right. Yeah.
Yeah, and... but I liked how it was his father, mm-hmm. and he wanted closure on his son's death. That's it. He wasn't there to hunt Riddick. He wasn't there to bring him back.
It worked well with Santana at first Santana's like, your name's too late.
Yeah, your name's...
And just their kind of interaction, he wasn't quite getting it. Wait, you don't want to split the money? And so the motivation was tough for Santana to pick up.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously he had a different motivation. Yeah. And so played well.
And do you think, I mean, I thought that it worked well. I thought it built to the reveal because you're like, what is this guy's motivation? He doesn't want, he's willing to let this guy take all the glory, take the bounty money, do whatever. He says, before you kill him, no, I want just an hour with him. And you're like, okay, what's going on? And so I thought when the reveal came, it was a nice twist.
Yeah, I thought that that was a nice tie back to Pitch Black.
Yeah.
And it made it understandable to his character.
Oh, absolutely. And again, that character, the John's character in Riddick, actually also played to Riddick's survival at the end. And, you know, he too saw Riddick maybe a little bit differently than what the legend had become of Riddick. Yeah. Which is, again, it's one of those things. We know that Riddick's a tough guy, but it would be interesting to see his backstory as like, you know, because they say he's murdered and done this. And you got to wonder, like, how many people did this guy murder and did they have it coming? Because he's usually the people he's expelling usually have it coming in one way, shape or form, because they've put him in a situation where the only way to get out is to kill or be killed.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, I was like, I don't think Riddick had a choice.
Right.
And like, oh, I'm just going to kill you out of, you know, murderous, merciless way. That was because he was on the defense most of the time, protecting himself and ending up killing people.
Yeah, it just seems like he's not killing people for the sake of killing. There's some motivation behind it. There's a reason. I think that makes the character strong, too.
And I think the reason why we identify to him as a character is, you know, we can be empathetic where we relate to him. But I think we want to be like him. The fact that, you know, we talked about Diaz being kind of a goofball. And overall, most of Santana's men, at least, are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so that comedic element to it versus Riddick, we're all like, well, I want to side with Riddick because I want to be smart. I want to be stealth. I want to be tactful. I want to have patience. Whereas these guys just look like buffoons, you know, when he's got their probe or whatever going back and forth and he's like, oh, this thing broken.
The Cyclops. Yeah.
And I think that goes to show because Riddick has all those qualities and the mercenaries had the brains, but the bounty hunters had the bronze. And so it had the balance of all of them. Riddick had it. All those qualities.
He had all those qualities except for being a buffoon. And again, I think it's a testament to the character. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is obviously Riddick has broken into the compound in one way, shape, or form because he's left his mark. And on a locker, that scene in the node locker, the engine node locker, where the
free trade,
so that the fair trade
and fair trade,
yeah, he writes fair trade on the locker, and there is actual debate as to whether or not they should open the locker because it has this heavy duty lock on it and it's specifically for the audience. It says, this will explode in your face, basically, if you unlock it the wrong way. And John's goes to Diaz and goes, are you sure that Riddick didn't get in there? He goes, are you asking me if I'm sure Riddick didn't take the key, which is hanging around my neck? Unlock it, change the combination, and then without me knowing, put the key back up around my neck. Yeah. Are you asking me that? Because I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. I would know. But yet, that scene, you didn't know. Yeah. And it was a great setup for suspense, even though you sort of kind of like, well, geez, as the audience, we would have known too. But yet, we're still like going, oh my God, when he does that last click, everybody's like, oh my head, you know what? I can't take this anymore. And that's because of the presence of Riddick. That's what he instills upon people. And that's, to me, that makes it a very fun character.
And I think they use that to their advantage because we as an audience knows that Riddick is capable of stealing a key and changing it and putting it back. Yep. And you would never know.
He could steal a lock of your hair without knowing.
Because they set up so well, right? So I think it worked in sets of threes. Mm-hmm. So I forget who goes into the ship and like, hey, be careful because, you know, he's telling Luna, the religious young kid,
right,
you know, Riddick could be anywhere. Pan up. There's Riddick just eating his peanuts or whatever it is. And then the second scene is that nude scene where he steals the mirror.
Yep.
Or actually, I think the mirror's first, then... Right, because then he's looking down.
Right, he's looking down.
Yeah, and then we kind of, you know, as Santana and Dahl are having their fight, we see Riddick there again. Yep. So we're like, okay, he's infiltrated this whole time. They've not seen him once.
Not once.
Yeah. And that also reflects the first two movies, because we see a lot of times where Riddick is there and no one else knows, but yeah. like he's literally right next to you.
Yep,
like,
or behind
grazing
you.
Yep. your hair, and you would never know.
Yeah, and I think I will say David Tui's direction in that regard is pretty clever, because we as the audience can see Riddick, whether he's in shadow or in the background or through the glasses or, you know, his like
his
swimming goggles, so to speak. You know, David Tui does a good job in setting all that up to a point, like when he's sitting on top of the trailer of the ship yeah. and he's sitting on top eating popcorn or whatever. That's funny.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. And it's also an ode because that scene happened in the first movie as well. And he's like, okay, they're going to look for me. I'm right here.
And again, just everything kind of plays so well in the respective. So when when there is that nude scene, you know, she comes out right after, and like, you perv, were you looking at me? And he's like,
I think it just tied in. I think this movie had a nice balance of suspense and action and comedy. Because when they were trying to unlock the locker, they're like, the first three clicks were good.
The first three clicks were good. Yeah.
So, yeah. I liked it. And it was a nice balance.
Yeah, it was. And again, you know, for the rest of the movie, I think the pacing ratchets up as the movie goes along. Until we have basically all of our cast members hold up in a bunker, so to speak. And, you know, I like the sound devices that they use. You know, number one, the rain. You know, when that storm comes, so it starts to rain. Okay, so we know bad rain. This is going to, you know, some bad stuff's coming.
Yeah.
But then when the Cyclops sound went off, and we could recognize that from an earlier scene where the Cyclops was going wild, you're like, oh, my God, what's out there? And they still couldn't see. And the guy's like, I can't see anything. Mm-hmm. And then all hell breaks loose. The guy gets speared and gets slammed. I mean, that scene was great. And then Riddick is there, and he's just doing what he was doing in the first movie. He's just like
he's chained
yep.
up.
And he's laughing at everybody else going, and you're afraid of little old me. And he's just laughing hysterically. It's like, you got bigger fish to fry, my friends. Like, let me out.
Yeah, and that was a good setup. And also, just really quickly to go back, you know, the first kind of interaction where any other people do show up besides Riddick, right? What's the first thing that we pretty much see? We release the prisoner.
Right.
She's shot. And it's like, okay, now we're going to put your head in here. And so that's a nice, you know, in terms of keeping Riddick likable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty powerful statement. Like, oh, you know, they're willing to do that just to catch this one guy. Well, how bad can Riddick really be?
And I'll credit David Tui on that scene. You know, it's a really good scene because obviously Riddick sees the tragedy in this, and then that this prisoner who's being brought in for a bounty, she's killed pretty much right in front of him, and he can't help her. And it makes the way it was directed, it makes him sympathizable. Like you go. Because he knows that that's just all kinds of wrong.
Yeah.
And it also leads to his distrust of everything. He can't he even has a sense of, like, not trusting John's because of it's like son like father or like father like son. Because the Cole Hauser John's in Pitch Black, too, was not a very moral character at all. And he would lie to people for his means to an end to get somewhere. And he actually, even they bring it up in this movie how Cole Hauser's John in Pitch Black said, okay, as we're going along, we need to set up a diversion. You kill the kid. And, you know, in this movie, Riddick says, I wasn't down with that. Yeah. I don't, you know. So again, it centers his character, gives him a moral gravity, so to speak, or a moral center. And that makes him likable too. You know, so that's why I want to know a little bit more about this character, because he is morally grounded. You know,
I think that's the myth. That's why you can't know the history, because then it ruins the magic.
So it's sort of like Clint Eastwood and like the spaghetti westerns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the legend. It's Unforgiven is a really good example of that, of like, you know, he used to kill women and children. You're like, he's just an old man. But check that movie out if you haven't seen it. So let's talk more about John's and Riddick when they finally kind of meet.
Yeah.
It's kind of a four-person standoff. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was really, you know, I like this because it's like a sci-fi western to a degree.
Yep.
You know, in that moment specifically. And I thought, you know, everyone played their cards well.
Yep.
You know, and I was wondering where Riddick was going with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he knew the cards he had to play with.
Yeah.
I liked his interaction with John first off because he was ultimately completely different from the Santana.
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, because Santana and John's both had the same mission to get Riddick, but they had different motives. And I liked how Riddick approached John's a different way than he did with Santana.
And you know what? It's interesting, you know, in that moment specifically, you know, we're always kind of trying to figure out the difference between Santana and John's. And it's great, you know, unlike in Pitch Black, whereas, you know, John's there was the worst of them.
Yeah, oh yeah.
This John's is not that bad. You know, he's not that bad, and I think in opposition to Santana, we see that.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
We see that very clear, mm-hmm. especially in that moment because you know, Santana's the one to grab his gun and start shooting.
Yep.
You know.
And John's like we mentioned before, the John's character in Riddick is he's smart. I mean, he's gotten to where he is because he can play. He has a great team of commandos behind him, including, you know, a great sharpshooter and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So you believe that they come in with brawn and they come in with smarts. But I think, you know, that scene with Riddick and digging and his conversation with Johns, to me, I thought it was well done because it wasn't overplayed. You know, I mean, Riddick just very matter-of-factly said, well, there's a lot about your son you didn't know, I suppose. Like, he really, you know, he was a drug addict.
Yep.
He definitely wasn't as strong as you. You know, he was sort of kind of a wimp. You know, he had a lot of fear in him. And, you know, the father, Johns, was having a hard time coping with this. And, in fact, he wasn't even believing him. He thought it was a Riddick game. When, you know, if we've seen the movies, we know that he wasn't. So, and you wonder if that was part of the ploy, too. You know?
And the reason why Johns wasn't as bad as Santana.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but I think Johns, though, Johns is a little bit more than muscle. You know,
yeah.
He's a military man.
Yeah,
you know,
brains.
Yeah, brains. So, you know, Santana is muscle. That's
exactly.
That's what he
The mercenaries were brains, the bounty hunters were muscle.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. What did you like about the scene?
The digging scene? I liked it, you know, just going into it, how everything was set up of like, okay, one of the bikes gets destroyed, you know, right. Now you gotta ride bitch.
Right.
And it was that was a lot of fun, and again, it seemed like the good, the bad, and the ugly kind of stand off.
Yeah.
You know, in a obviously much different way.
Yeah. It, you know what was what I thought was clever is that it was Riddick who saw Santana's double cross, but Johns didn't. It's like, he goes, we have one bike. Oh, really? Go check the rotor.
Yeah, check the other one.
Yeah, and, you know, he had pulled a pin or something from that. But, you know, he had sabotaged that bike as well, or he took it. So, yeah, it was, you know, Riddick, and that's another thing that makes him, to your point earlier, he's a smart guy. He sees all level. Like, it's like playing chess with him.
Yeah.
You know, he strategizes, and he can see moves far ahead from when they happen, so... that was a good scene. I enjoyed the scene inside the compound. Outside of Fair Game, I enjoyed the scene inside the compound, what he did with the machete.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and he
that kicks was great.
It. Yeah, it's great.
You knew that was going to happen.
Yep.
Every time they referenced to the box that head, and I was like, no, it's Santana's head that's going to be in the box.
Yeah. It was a really good scene, and while all this bedlam and chaos is going around, it was good. It very similar to the first Pitch Black, you know, where they were trying to escape these creatures. I found it interesting that it was the creatures from the beginning of the movie that are basically, you know, my one thing was, well, you know, I know he wanted to go up, you know, and he had to get through these creatures to do that. I was just, did they explain why you just couldn't have gone around?
They didn't.
It was just one of those things.
Maybe
it was
just the terrain he couldn't manage.
Yeah. You know, it made for a good fight scene. And, you know.
You know what? I think, if I'm to explain it, I think it's because of the hyena dogs.
Okay.
You know, because the reason the dogs don't go there is because of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he can't go outside there because they're going to kill him. So, you know, that was his kind of only shot to either face the hyenas out there or go this way.
Go this way. Yeah.
So. Interesting fact about the big baddie creatures in this movie. In production, I believe they called it mud demons, but the design of these creatures were actually made for Pitch Black.
Oh, they were.
Yeah,
and Patrick Tatopoulos
Tatopoulos. He originally designed it for the first movie, and they didn't use it. But since they made the third movie, they went back to this design, and it ultimately became the big bad creature.
The big bad.
Movie.
Yeah,
so I thought that was interesting.
A nice little that to me is a fan tie-in. You know, they really paid a nice homage to Pitch Black, and they thank it, in a sense, for saying, hey, this got this started. You know, I think a good question regarding Riddick is, you know, hey, I do wish that they had picked a better date. And, you know, Universal will say, or has said, that, yes, they would have liked 20, but they feel that 18, you know, is a really good number. We'll see how it does overseas. But the question is, you know, do we want Riddick back? I mean, because I was going, geez, do we care if Riddick comes back after Chronicles? And, you know, will Vin Diesel feel that there was enough fan love to make a fourth and maybe tie things up?
I mean, it's going to be interesting with his schedule.
Yeah.
Fast 7, 8, 9, Guardians of the Galaxy. Although they made that amazing because he just has to play Groot.
Groot. Yeah.
Basically, he has one word, and so, but he finds that very interesting.
He loves it.
Then, yeah, I mean, he's always wanted to do Hannibal.
Yeah. I think where they left the third movie off, because he gets to leave the planet again, and each movie kind of starts him off with a different planet.
Right.
So, since he's gone, he could start another movie on a different planet.
Yeah. Well, or maybe actually, since he's piloting the ship, he can get to go home.
Yeah, back to
her. And check that out. You know, again, just going back to the fandom deal, it's just a fascinating franchise. It just really is, because it has had a survival mode. It's like Riddick. It's very survival mode. It persists. It perseveres.
Yeah.
You know, again, most studios are not going to plunk in money to make a third when your second one cost $105 million and only domestically grossed not even 60.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. I mean, you ask, go ahead and ask Disney if they're going to make a sequel to The Lone Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, so the mere fact that we even got this movie to me is fascinating. And it's, you know, to great testament of Vin Diesel and what he wants to do, and his star power. When you think about it, you know, it was his star power that was the driving force to doing this and taking the rights, as you said, for the Riddick character. And I believe he put up some of his own money as
Universal. I mean, Universal paid none.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're just distributing at this point.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, because Vin Diesel, he used his own production company to help start the third movie.
Yeah, and I believe that I'm not even entirely sure that Universal has many of the foreign rights. So it'll be interesting to see how it does. I believe it's opening up this weekend in foreign territories as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and to see if Riddick can persevere and overcome.
I think so. And, you know, Vin really identifies with that just in life. I mean, you know, he loves getting... He says he takes about 4 months to get ready for this character because of how dark Riddick really is.
Really?
I mean, you know, we should get him in and just talk about the backstory. He would all day.
Oh, I bet.
You know, and that's how we'd get the real backstory on Riddick.
Which would be fantastic. And I like his relationship with David Toohey as well. You know, he's
done all three movies.
Yeah, he's done all three movies. They stand by each other. I think David Toohey has given the movies a look that, you know, we know, and I think nobody's going to know the characters better than these two people. You know?
And, you know, to that point, I mean, I think their strongest asset is the story and the characters.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, when they're riding the quote-unquote motorcycles, it's pretty cheesy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Some of the action, kind of cheesy. You know, but in terms of when they're actually fighting hand-to-hand, like when the creatures are involved and the creatures are strangling things, I think that was brilliant.
Right.
But, like, the actual hand-to-hand combat and when he's flying through the... It's just a little cheesy.
Let's call it B-movie-ish.
B-movie, okay.
Because the Riddick, let's face it, these are B popcorn movies, but they're very entertaining. That's not a bad thing to be a B movie today, so long as you're, hey, I had my popcorn, I'm there, I bought my ticket, I was there for the ride, I had a good time. No. So it's definitely a cue that summer's over. Like, I think this movie would have gotten eaten alive had it come out in June or July. But nonetheless, a fun movie. And you're right, the motorcycle sequences, I did like the fact that these things fly, but they sounded like a Harley. I love that. So, but
again, you know, all is forgiven because of how much you're into the ride.
Absolutely.
The story,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'll give him tons of credit for that.
Yeah, and
all the combat, the fighting, that was still fun to watch. And having his Riddick's hands actually on the creature, like the head to not to bite his head off. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, he's good when he's fighting creatures. He's good when he's fighting people. You know, it's funny. One thing I didn't mention. Well. One thing I was mentioning about a Mad Max thing, as I was watching it, for some reason or another, Mad Max came into my head because he's another anti-hero that takes his lumps all the time, and he's wandering through to survive. When I was doing some research on, like, cinematographer, David Egbe is the cinematographer to this movie. He is the cinematographer to the original Mad Max. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting tie-in, but when you look at it, it's very... Well, Mad Max is the Australian outback, and this one has Canada, but it was very outbackish, desertish, so it had that look and feel. So that could have been why I was starting to think Mad Max for this character. And he does wander, you know.
Even though this pretty much this whole movie was on a stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, they filmed it on a stage.
Yeah.
Because of the Canadian winter weather. They couldn't film outside. They wanted to originally film outside, but they couldn't because of the winter.
Well, it looked fantastic wherever, you know. I mean, their sets, I love how it goes from open, you know, out in the open, and then we're in that one closed, we're in the bunker. Basically, and that's clever too. You know, a lot of it was filmed in the dark. I think we talked about 3D earlier. Like, and God, I'm so glad this movie wasn't in 3D. It would have looked awful because it was so dark. Sometimes it's hard to follow action that way. And I'm glad it looked good though, right? I mean, did everybody?
It did. I don't think you didn't need those gimmicks.
No, you didn't need so.
No.
Now, I think it was a well-shot, photographed film. It was edited really well. I thought it was put together pretty well. The pacing worked for me, pretty much, you know, and from beginning to middle and end.
And they definitely, you know, I'll give so much credit to the writing. And just even when Santana shot the dog, I keep calling it a dog, you know, again, they pick their moments to be really harsh.
Yep.
Because it wasn't Riddick.
Yeah.
It was not Riddick's fault.
Yeah, and that was another thing. I was kind of a little bit upset because we see Riddick, you know, grow fond of this dog-like creature, and then they killed this dog mercilessly. And then I just wanted a quick moment where it'd be like, that was for my dog or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't really tie it back to, you know, avenge for his animal. It was just kind of killed it. That was it.
Yeah. But it gave him the impetus to persevere, and oh, these guys are going to get it, and these guys are going to get it good. But you know, and I'll take it back. Like I like the way that it ended, and I do like the flip around from the end of Pitch Black. I like the fact that people actually, you know, Katie Sackhoff's character, like. She was pissed off at him, too, and she wanted him down. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Is this before or after he fucks me?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Again, a great line should be in a shirt. I like the way that somebody actually picked Riddick up off the ground. You know, when he was down, I mean, and that character's thinking, yep, this is just where it is again. I'm left alone.
Because that was a harsh. So at first you're kind of like, okay, is he going to pick him up? Because he's kind of grabbing him like this.
Yeah.
But no, it's to flip him over and steal the pack. Right. And then, you know, from there you're like, what, you asshole?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's another double cross, which he seems to have gone through all his life. So for them to come back, I thought, oh, well, that's a nice twist. Somebody helps them. And, you know, when they're in their ships and they just go their separate ways. And I just, it was a very satisfying ending. And it was just nice to see somebody pick him up when he was kicked down. You know, I mean,
he said at the beginning of the movie, people keep knocking him down.
Yeah. So it's, you know, when you wonder if more people were, you know, felt that way, you know, maybe he wouldn't be such a hardened character, but then we wouldn't have Riddick. I loved when he had that bone, when he had that bone in him, and then he pulls it out and he's like, nah, better I'll put this back in.
But then he picked up the little stones and burnt it so it wouldn't be bleeding.
Yeah, did a little Rambo cauterization there. Yeah. And it's
just goes to show how tough he is.
And again, I don't know if he could have done that PG-13.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? I mean, to a movie like this, this is where being rated R, like, works.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to pansy it down much. You don't want a PG-13 this movie. You want a hardcore. You want a hardcore, like, when I break your arm, you're going to hear it, and the audience will hear it and feel it. And
I think it also goes with the growth of the audience, too, because people who first saw Pitch Black, I'm sure they were teenagers, but now they're adults, and they can handle it.
Yeah, and you can't get lines like, before or after he fucks me. You can't get, before or after he beds me. Yeah, no, it doesn't work as well.
It doesn't work.
No. So, yeah, and personally, I wouldn't mind seeing another Riddick movie. And who knows where he'll take the character. I think, again, in this business, longevity says something. And you try a lot of things like Vin Diesel has. And, you know, he's been in dramas, he's been in the comedies, he's been in action movies. Not all of his action movies have worked, but the mere fact that the gentleman is still around today says something about him and his character. And maybe he does look at himself as being a bit of a Riddick, where I'm sure he's taken his lumps being in this industry, in the film industry. He's probably taken his lumps, and he's still around. And look what he did with the Fast and Furious franchise. Maybe, you know, I know it was a team effort, but the way they rebooted that, in a sense, they reset the clock on Fast and Furious. They didn't make it about car stealing. Now they're caper films, and they're great popcorn action. And they're huge money makers. So, you know, kudos to Vin Diesel. I mean, he's had longevity where many people have tried to do the same thing to no avail. He may not ever win an Academy Award, but who cares? He will entertain audiences. He's still fun to watch.
You know, it's funny you mention that. He does say for him it's not about the Oscar, but he would like to win it because of he calls him his father, but it's not his real father. He would like to win it in his lifetime to hand it to his father.
No.
You know, only for that reason. But he personally doesn't necessarily need it.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought that was interesting of him to say.
And that softens him up, too. You know, I think at the beginning of his career, he sort of kind of had a hardness to him that people thought, which I think at the very beginning, if you read back, which may have hindered him getting some roles over other roles. But, again, I think that his longevity says something. And when Fast and Furious makes as much money as it has, that's a fan base that comes back. If he wasn't in that reboot of Fast and Furious, I don't think it would have done as well.
No. And I don't think Riddick would be around either.
Yeah, I agree.
Had he not done that.
Yeah, had he not done that. So he's smart in that, and I do like the fact that he, you know, he put his money where his mouth is. There aren't that many people who will do that, you know, and that's a stand-up guy.
Absolutely. Is there anything else we want to say before we wrap this up?
Did we,
I like this movie because if you go back to Pitch Black, even though the title was Pitch Black, that movie was all blue.
Yeah.
It was all blue.
Washed out.
Blue, gray. Blue was the movie, black.
Yeah, even though it took place in a desert on a planet with three suns, it was still blue.
Yeah.
And then this one, they're on another desert planet, but it definitely felt like a desert. It felt hot and deserted and dry and not a place you want to be at.
No, it felt like hell.
Visually, I thought it was amazing. Even though most of it was
a good description of it. Hell.
Yeah.
You know, because that's kind of where Riddick was, in hell.
Yeah, and he was dumped off. And again, being dumped off. And when you go back to Pitch Black, well, let's take a look, you know, let's look at Pitch Black and Riddick when we're talking about budgets. Pitch Black was $23
million. Right.
Okay. And I'm going to say, you know, and I hear what you're saying about the color and everything. Pitch Black still managed to look good considering the constraints that they had. They filmed in the Australian outback, $23 million to get this shoot done. It still looked decent. This movie is $38 million. So you're talking 13 years. That sounds like, with inflation and everything being what it is, $38 million to do an action science fiction movie, that's pretty decent budgeting-wise.
Yeah.
So, and this movie, I think, looks equally as good as Pitch Black. It probably looks better. Things, special effects are a little bit more polished. You know, the creatures didn't look so CG.
I think it helped that they only had two different creatures, like one, the badass creature, and then the dingo doggies.
Yeah, the dingo doggies. Yeah. Yeah, so I think the look of the movie played into the atmosphere. It also, you know, when you go from it being sunny and then those ominous clouds start coming over, that plays thematically. You know, one thing we didn't talk about was the religious aspect, because it's sort
Let's
of
yeah, that's Marissa's well, department.
Just, well, but
no, it goes back to the
Pitch Black,
and the second one, because the second one had the necromongers who were like pretty much crusaders, and trying to convert everyone. And then we see Luna praying all the time, and Riddick says, "Don't involve God in this," or some kind of line like that. But it goes to show that Riddick doesn't have faith, and he mentions that in the first and second movie.
Like, but he does believe in God.
He believes in something, yeah.
He believes in something.
I just find it, like, especially Pitch Black, like, that ship that crashed was transporting a father and three sons to, what do they call it, the new Mecca.
Yeah, new
Mecca. And, you know, religion seems to play a part of these movies in one way, shape, or form. And Riddick, who does, I think he believes, but he doesn't place the deed, like, listen, the, yeah, what do you feel about your God now? Is because
nothing to do with
he's
this.
A very to Riddick, and you can understand why he seems to be a very spiteful deity, whatever the God is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just found that the in a science fiction horror movie, I find that, you know, we're not talking about The Exorcist or a possession movie. In this kind of a movie, I just find that it's very fascinating that they bring that element up. A lot. It's just been a common thread throughout. So I just had to throw that out there.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too, how they kept bringing that element back. But then they kind of nipped it in the bud and be like, nope, that's it.
Yeah,
like, don't stop praying, pretty much. And the movie kept going.
And it moves, but it's always brought up.
Yeah.
God or belief and faith is always brought up, so I appreciate the movies. It's an interesting thread in this type of a movie. You don't see it often.
And I think that also adds just it humanizes the cast members too in the movie.
And in a sense, though, can you say that it humanizes Riddick or it changes him?
I wouldn't really say change, but it gives him a nice human element too.
Yeah, So, you know, again, if you know. I hope the people who watched it agree with us. I'd love for them to talk back and write some comments. I mean, let us know. I mean, it's really important. We want this to grow. We want people. Listen, I understand it's NFL football day. No, but you know what? Before I was watching the Patriots game, you know, there are these guys sitting around. They're all dressed up in their suits and ties and they're talking football. We get to talk about movies. And talking about movies to me, this is like the best thing ever. And so, in the opportunity that you folks have afforded me to do, I think this is amazing. And to talk about movies in this casual, way better than talking about whether or not a quarterback is going to throw a slant pass or he's going to do, you know, I like talking about this. And it's important if you're watching this to comment, you know, because this is a conversation. This isn't just us talking. You can be interactive in this. Movies are a very interactive thing. Love, hate the movie, talk about the movie. So.
Exactly. And, you know, most of you will probably have much more of a fan geek perspective on it than us. And so, you know, please use those comments to your advantage to do that.
Yeah.
To talk about those things, what you liked. And, you know, I'll personally get better at responding to some of them, and I'll chime in, and you know, I'll like the ones that I like and dislike the ones I don't like. How about that?
That's the way to do it. Yeah. I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be here with you folks to do this. And again, as a movie fan, we're not in suits and ties here, folks. We're talking about movies. And it's a passion. You do have to sort of kind of be a geek to do it. And we know that if you're watching this, that you have a passion. If you're watching AfterBuzz, period, you have a passion for whatever it is you're watching. We want this to grow. I want this to grow. I love working with you folks. And comment. Let us know.
What's our next movie?
That's a good question. I mean, personally, I am down for... Next week is Insidious 2. So I'm down for that because horror, outside of me loving horror, it's James Wan, who just comes off The Conjuring. Insidious, PG-13, by the way. James Wan directed that one as well. This guy's on a hot streak. And speaking of Vin Diesel, he's directing the next Fast and Furious movie, too. So I think there are, you know, Insidious 2. We've got Wizard of Oz coming up.
Oh, that's one we'll definitely be doing, Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. I mean, that's great.
It's classic.
And we'll look forward to our October movie month.
Absolutely.
We'll be doing ones that come out, but we'll also kind of pick a few of our favorites from the old, from the past, and we'll kind of, you know, there's a few on the table that are fun. We'll do, Thanksgiving theme in November, and then a few Christmas ones in December.
Awesome.
I think Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is definitely on the Thanksgiving.
We're excited to do that one.
So it'll be fun. And then, and of course, Christmas. And then we're in the new year.
We're just flowing by. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, like, at my job, I deal with a lot of exhibitors. And every now and then I send out a little Technicolor propaganda thing. And I opened up going, where the hell did the summer go? I mean, I remember buying my advance tickets to Star Trek Into Darkness to go, and now I'm waiting for the Blu-ray to show up at my doorstep. Yeah. I mean, where the hell did the summer go? It's a crazy
summer.
Way back. And, you know, that's another thing we can do, too, is talk about our summer movies. Talk about top 10. What did we hate? We can try to throw that in there sometime, too.
I got to catch up on a few of them. I want to see if you guys want to do the Spectacular Now. That might be a fun one.
I saw that.
That looks good.
Spectacular Now. In two words, spectacular wow. Seriously, I mean, you will, again,
we will
go back to our coming of age theme, which I know this has nothing to do with Riddick, and I apologize for going off topic, but I just recently watched Stand By Me. Mm-hmm. And that movie is just, when you talk about coming of age stories and coming of age movies, you can't talk about it without talking about Stand By Me. And I think when I'm looking at movies like Spectacular Now and Way, Way Back of this year, you know, they harken back to, you know, what Stand By Me did. And that was a rated, again, let's talk ratings, that was a rated R movie.
Back in the 80s.
And it did pretty well. And, you know, and now today's
Stand By Me. That still has longevity.
Oh, it's huge.
People
longevity.
People constantly talk about that movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, well, is that our cue?
That's our cue. Thank you guys for listening.
All right.
Where can we find you, Dimitri?
You can find me at TrekBoy1701. That's TrekBoy1701 @gmail.com. Send me an email. I'll write back. I will, if you send an email. And comment on our AfterBuzz TV at the Movies Edition. Comment. Let us know.
Yeah, definitely. And you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at SerafiniTV or at the movie theaters if you can't find me here.
And just a word of advice for all you wannabe filmmakers or filmmakers out there. Be careful of your movie titles. Movie titles are very important. But as you saw, Dimitri said the Spectacular Now is Spectacular Wow. That's a bonus. But sometimes you'll get like reviewers like Superbad is just that, super bad. So just be careful about how you name your movies, because I hate when critics do that. Not that we aren't critics. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Again, we'll be doing a whole slew of movies, so kind of check back in with us, you know, and you know, let's even suggest movies that that you guys would like to listen to.
That would be great too.
You know, especially for the Halloween theme, the Thanksgiving and the Christmas ones. If you guys definitely, you know, as of now, we definitely will be doing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So, but if there's any other ones you want to see for any of those holidays, let us know. Info at AfterBuzz TV, AfterBuzz TV on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And with that said, this has been Riddick. Thank you.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.